everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news up to the 20th of January, 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, head of research, policy and standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story, Kate, is a BBC news report of a Swindon firm in the UK that gives non-smokers 4 extra days of holiday for not smoking at work. KCJ Training and Employment Solutions Managing Director Don Bryden has introduced the measure despite being a smoker himself, saying that he wants to compensate staff who do not smoke rather than penalise those who do. Mr. Bryden says if the prospect of more leave motivated people to give up smoking, he would support them. I've been asked if someone doesn't smoke for 3 months, will I give them a day off? And I said, of course, he said. And if they can do it for 6 months, I'll give them 2 days. Remember, a healthier workplace is a happier workplace. I will work with the people who smoke, but I want to make sure that the ones who are sitting there working while the others take their ciggy break get some sort of compensation. Kate, is this sort of initiative to be applauded?
If we put aside the fact that the people are smoking and looking at the other activities that go with that, they're getting up from their desks. They're socialising with people throughout the organisation. And as somebody said to me many years ago, usually a group of smokers is a very equal opportunities group. If you smoke, you are welcome, irrespective of anything else about you. So those informal communications, the getting up and exercising, they're all great things. And I think that's what we should be trying to replicate, and without the unfortunate bad effects on your health that smoking actually has. So the fact it's come under the spotlight and that people are being encouraged not to do it, let us not forget the benefits of people getting together in that informal way.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story is research reported by Fast Company that the one thing employees really want in order to stay engaged in their work is workspace. A survey of workplace amenities of 1,600 North American professionals conducted by human resources advisory firm Future Workplace and smart building tech company View Inc. found that 53% said they valued natural light and views of nature most. In fact, well above amenities like fitness centres and games rooms, and the most important amenities after natural light and views were an on-site cafe or food, followed by a nice kitchen. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the most prized amenities also seem to be among the scarcest. Although employees place the highest value on natural light and views, these are also areas that employees reported being the most dissatisfied with in their current environments. Damler Gerhardt, Senior Managing Director of CBRE's workplace practice, said in a statement, "A workplace's physical layout and amenities can signal and reinforce a company's values for its employees, and moving private offices away from the windows so that most of the floor has an outdoor view shows consideration for all employees." Kate, what can leaders learn from this research?
Immediately, the positive impact that being able to look at nature has on mental health is very well documented. So people are not asking for something that actually doesn't have a benefit for them, and it's shown to calm people down. So a generosity about who gets the windows, irrespective of hierarchy, I think is a brilliant first step to take, and to take seriously what people are asking for. It's very easy to talk about engagement, but that is such a big word and has so many components. But if we're saying actually natural light's lovely, being able to look out of windows, that's really nice. These are not extravagant claims, are they? And many of us who've worked in windowless rooms with no natural light and no view of anything will know that they actually sap your energy. So please let us think about this a little more. Let architects, let office designers be much more creative and kind in how they allocate space.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story asks, will EHRC workplace harassment guidelines be effective? Wide-ranging new guidelines designed to help employers stamp out harassment have emerged from the Equality and Human Rights Commission, with banter one of the many causes for concern in the organisation's sites. The guidelines address various different forms of unwanted conduct that people may experience in the workplace, and this guidance includes a 7-step process. EHRC Chief Executive Rebecca Hilsenrath sent a letter to leading employees and industry groups urging CEOs to abide by the guidelines. She wrote, "There are 7 clear steps that you can take to make sure that you are effectively preventing and responding to sexual harassment. These steps include developing an anti-harassment policy and engaging your staff." However, as the guidelines are not currently enshrined in law, Kate, how effective do you think they are likely to be, particularly among smaller firms that don't currently have high public profiles to maintain and may therefore not have the same sense of urgency to observe the recommendations as larger firms?
Of course, there's more at stake if there is going to be PR fallout from some of these inappropriate practices, and that's undoubtedly the case. But the idea that small workplaces won't benefit from an environment where people are respected, and if you remember our research that we published last November, Rod, respect was seen as such an important value, both at an organisational and a personal level. And the meaning of respect is to have regard for other people's feelings and to hold them in high regard. If you're doing that, you won't be acting inappropriately towards them, because essentially that's disrespectful. And I think the problem with very high level 7 steps to achieving whatever it is one wants to achieve, when number 2 is engage your staff, what does that mean? That's much bigger than actually just a 7-step process. It's easy to say, very, very difficult to do. But respect has to be right from induction in every interaction. And this is really where managers can role model respectful interactions with their employees and really have a powerful influence.
Thank you very much indeed, Kate. Our next story is that Hull is looking to become the first city in the UK to test Universal Basic Income, UBI, after a proposal was backed by a cross-party group of councillors. Local politicians passed a motion proposed by Paul Drake Davis, a Liberal Democrat councillor, to write to the government to request permission to pilot the scheme. Mr. Drake Davis told the Yorkshire Post earlier this week that UBI has the potential to help people reach their full creative and economic potential. "We live in a world of increasing job insecurity, where more and more people in Hull and across the UK are struggling to plan and build a better future for themselves and their families," the councillor said. "Instead, people are just focused on surviving month to month. There needs to be change to the system." The introduction of UBI would see every adult paid a weekly sum estimated at between £50 and £100 a week, regardless of income. Kate, what are the implications of this initiative for leaders and organisations?
What might not be fully appreciated here is that this campaigning to recognise unpaid work as being equivalent to paid work is really has its roots in the feminist movement. And how much work is done that doesn't get paid, it's not paid for work, and therefore seems to have a lower status. And I think a universal benefit like this is one step to recognising how important work is to our feeling of well-being, our feeling of purpose, of making a contribution. And we only have to look at the huge number of people who volunteer to know that you don't have to be paid to feel that you're making a meaningful contribution. And what I wouldn't like for this is for us to all think about the people who are going to take advantage of it, because my prediction is they will be the minority, and for a lot of people, it'll be recognition of the contribution that they're already making and actually inspiring people to be good citizens.
Well, thank you very much, Kate. But before we do finish, is there anything that you would like to tell us about the Institute that our listeners would be interested in?
I think they'll be very interested when we publish our latest research, New Decade, New Direction, where we really look at the reasons that people stay in their job and, of course, leave it. So please watch out for a podcast specially devoted to that next week.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.